Jesus save.
Mormon Mental Health is a production of Mormon Stories Podcast and the Open Stories Foundation. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards supporting its listeners. To support the podcast, please consider a donation today at mormonmentalhealth.org. And thanks for listening.
Jordan Compass.
What if any positive experiences have you had in your advocation for your son as far as church leaders are concerned or ward communities or members in the church?
I think there's actually been quite a few. You know, one was before we put the letter out, this was early last year, we went to a PFLAG, which is the local Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, which is national and not a church organization by any means. But, you know, we went there and quite quickly they figured out that we were Mormon and that we were still active. And they were just stunned.
They were a little cynical and skeptical of us at first.
Oh yeah, they gave us the they were throwing all the right questions at us to really see what our commitment was to helping Jordan and to supporting other gay and lesbian people, and rightly so. And it's interesting to note to me, for all of our advocacy for Yes on 8, and, you know, anytime we talk with members of the church and they're critical of homosexuality or gay people, they're all, oh, well, I'm just defending marriage. For all of our pretense for defending marriage, I've yet to come across a gay person outside of the church or not related in some way to the church who actually knows what we even mean when we say that. They don't know anything about temple marriage, eternal marriage, or any of those concepts. They just know that Mormons hate gay people. And our PFLAG experience afterwards, we actually got to, you know, actually express and say, you know what, yeah, we were involved in Prop 8 and we're really sorry we did it, but here's what Mormon theology is and why we're there. And not one soul in that room knew any of that. And afterwards, they're like, okay, I can understand where you guys are coming from now. And
It became a real missionary experience, because there was 30 people in that room that were thinking very negatively about Mormons, which was deserved after Prop 8. I mean, there are people across the whole country that they don't even know what the doctrine of the LDS Church is, but they sure know how we feel about gay people.
Right.
And these are people, we walk into this room, they're gay, they have been hurt by members of my church because of Prop 8. And we felt, I was nervous, frankly, going, I felt like walking into the lion's den. Once they knew we were Mormon, I knew we were going to be attacked. And to their credit, we weren't attacked, but we were asked hard questions. They said, so did you participate in Prop 8? And I said, yes. And he said, and I bet you donated to it too. And I said, well, we donated our time, but we didn't have money at the time to donate to the organ or to the campaign. And they said, well, do you pay your tithing? And we said, yes. And they said, well, you donated to it then.
Right.
And I said, yeah. And at that point, I got emotional, which is common for me. So I started crying a little bit. And I just said, and I am so sorry. I said, I am so sorry for any pain that I have caused you, directly or indirectly. I said, I just didn't know. And I think my tears maybe softened them, or they saw that we were serious and we were genuine and we were trying to find a way to make this work within our church, but we loved our son completely. And it was amazing, because people that were very negative towards us at first have become some of our biggest defenders. When mean things are being said about us on Facebook or at the group or whatever, they're some of our first people to come to our defense. Hmm. You know, so it's been a really cool kind of a reverse missionary experience, where this group of people now really has a lot of respect for the Mormon religion, that if we could just have more experiences like that as members of the church, we could maybe undo some of the negativity that Prop 8 caused.
Right. Well, and what about within the church itself? Have you guys had any positive experiences as far as with bishops or young men's leaders or
Well, I've got to say, my last meeting with my stake president, we've met with them probably monthly. So, and that's easily 14, 15 meetings at least over the last year and a half. And, you know, the last one was the best one yet. So we're making progress on a local level.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, also, you know, this affirmation conference was really awesome this last year. There was over, it was the largest attendance they've ever had. There was easily over 400 people, and there were friends and allies and family and people in all sorts of circumstance, and it had a very, very, you know, it wasn't, I know in a lot of these types of forums where people have been hurt and injured, you can get a very anti-Mormon vibe or feel going on, but it wasn't really about that. It was about getting to a very healthy spiritual place, whether you were inside the church or outside the church, and be, because all of these people, one way or another, whether through family or faith, are tied to the church.
Right.
The, you know, even if you leave the church, if the rest of your family is members of the church, you're always going to be dealing with it. And coming to a place of peace and happiness with all of that is, I think, really, really important. And I think you see the church taking steps towards them. And I actually see in the at least in the LDS gay community, you're seeing people who really have a would love to increase, you know, have more reconciliation with their family and with the church. And that's wonderful to see.
Yeah, but if you're asking, like, you know, in our wards and congregations, like positive experiences we've had at that level, I'm sitting here trying to think of a really great positive experience, and I can't think of one. Is that sad? Mm-hmm. We've had many moments where people have privately come up to us in a private conversation and thanked us for what we're doing, said they were proud of us, we were brave, we were pioneers, this absolutely needs to happen. But the part that's hard for us is when negative things are said, especially in public, like many times fast and testimony meetings, very negative things are said kind of in our direction about this. We've never had an instance where we've had a leader or even someone in our ward stand up and say, that's not okay. There's never been anyone that's defended us or supported us from a leadership point of view or from a public point of view. But many of them have, I mean, they say, we're silently supporting you and we love what you're doing, but at the same time, that doesn't help us at all because we still feel like we are left alone, you know, to be attacked. And if somebody comes up later and says, oh, thank you for what you did, it would just be great if somebody could, while we're being attacked, say, hey, wait a second, you know, they're doing a good thing, they love their son, they're trying to make this work for him. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of a really great positive experience to give you, and I can't really think of one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of where our frustration comes in, where the message on the MormonsandGays.org is not saturating to the ground level of the church really at all right now.
Right.
It's going to take time. It's going to take a focused effort, and I'm not sure the internal will is there in the leadership. I think there's a lot of, I think there's division on a lot of different levels on this issue. So it makes the church move very slowly.
Right.
There was one thought I had with the church website. I know we've talked about that a lot. And I, for one, am very grateful for it. And there is so much in it that is good. I do have, there's a couple things in it that I wish were different. There's actually quite a bit that I wish was different about it. But the two main things that I wish that would be huge for us is nowhere on that website is there a teenager talked about at all. Mm-hmm. It's only adults. And I know that's where my mindset is because I have a gay teenager. But at the same time, they are the most vulnerable and the most at risk because my son is rare in as young as he came out. Most don't come out that young. They're not able to, you know, much as my son felt he didn't feel like he could trust us and or trust a leader. And these kids are, they're hearing these messages that are great messages for straight kids, but are very damaging for a gay kid to hear. And they're sitting there hearing this over and over again. And their parents are there listening to it and nodding along. And they feel like their parents agree with that message. And there is no place for them. And not having a teenager on the website, it, you know, we have had every single one of our church leaders, ward and stake. And, you know, we saw 8 different therapists trying to find the right one for Jordan. 5 of those were LDS. All 5 of them, every one of them said to us, there is no such thing as a gay teenager.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, every one of them said, it's a phase. They're confused. This is the popular thing to say. So it makes these kids feel like they don't believe me. They think I'm lying. They're not trusting my real life experience.
These were the LDS therapists who said that, or even the non-LDS?
No, the non-LDS didn't say that, but all 5 of the LDS therapists we saw said that. And
they were all pretty crazy, though. just to throw that in there, they were all pretty much nuts.
And but all of our church leaders said the same thing. Hmm. So the fact that we're getting this message, I'm sitting there looking at my son, and I know he's gay. Like, his whole life makes sense to me now that I have that one piece of information. And by not acknowledging that there's a gay teenager puts them at even more risk. And these kids are killing themselves at an astronomical rate. We have got to acknowledge that they are real, that they are there, that they need help. And with them not being on the website, it's just one more way that they're told that they don't exist. So that's one thing that I wish was different. And the next thing that I wish would be on the church website is it's beautiful in saying, love your family member, keep your family together, but it doesn't tell you how. What does that look like on a daily basis? How do I parent a gay child? The best work out there for that is the Family Acceptance Project. Dr. Caitlin Ryan has written a brilliant book for the LDS Church. It's just a booklet. She wrote it in conjunction with the Mormon bishop, Dr. Bob Reese. And this book is the quintessential tool that every family needs that's dealing with this issue. It tells you step by step, these behaviors hurt your gay child. These behaviors help your gay child. It tells you how to parent this. The booklet doesn't threaten doctrine. It is, when I came across her work, it honestly felt like sunshine in the darkest place I had ever been in, because it gave me hope. It told me how to do this, what will hurt him, what will help him. If there was some of her information on the church website or a link to her information, it would be amazing. We have such a friend in Dr. Ryan for the Mormon Church, and she's the sweetest woman, but she's not Mormon. And she's done this whole work for us because she sees what a huge need we have.
Wow. Well, we have come pretty much to the end of my questions. I guess I was going to ask you, Tom, one more thing. You had mentioned that, you know, you've had these 14 to 15 meetings with bishops or stake presidents or ecclesiastical leaders of some kind, and you felt like this last one went well or better. So how do you measure success, or how would you measure progress? How would you start knowing that, hey, we're getting somewhere?
Well, on this level, we decided to start earlier this summer to have a, I don't even know that we have a name for it yet, but it's just a meeting for anybody in the church who's has any sort of LGBT, whether they're gay, they have a family member that's gay, a dad, a mom, a sibling, and
it's a monthly support group.
Just a support meeting, no agenda, just people who can get together and talk about this. And we've had really nice, we've had, you know, just in our home, probably 30 plus people at the meetings this summer. But we had originally approached him because, like I told you before, I was an Elders Quorum president. I was like, you know, let's do something that's more organized from the church to make them, make gay people actually feel like the church would like them to show up. And his whole response was exactly what you were saying earlier, where I'm going to look up the chain and see what the church wants me to do about this. And until I get direction from above, I'm not going to do anything. And I think that's what the majority of the church does, whether it's regular members. I think a lot of them are like deer in headlights and are looking up the road to see what they should do, or how they should act or how they should respond. And that's kind of a conditioned response. We want to do what's right, but we don't really know what's right because we shield ourselves from being educated about it. And this last time I went in there, you know, I had told him all of our most recent experiences, and he knew that we were having this meeting. And this time he said, you know, I think I'm going to suggest to all the bishops in the stake that they, if they need any assistance, they know you're having this meeting and they can refer people to you to show up at the meeting. And that was the first time he'd ever expressed anything. And it was almost like, because we've been asking him for months to do just that, and then it was just like he brought it up like, oh, hey, this is my idea. But it was like, okay, he's turned a page here, and that this is good and progressive. So much of this doesn't require doctrinal shifts in any regard. It's just leading with compassion and acting like you care. And we feel paralyzed, like we can't even do that.
Right. Well, and to ask a really tough question, and one that, of course, is completely speculative, but if Jordan had not been gay, where do you expect the two of you would have been on this issue?
Well, you know, I explored that quite a bit. I think you really need to, and this is where advocacy is kind of, especially for gay people themselves, it's really, really hard to turn the corner on this if you don't know people or have relationships with people who are gay, which is where in the church, having a more insulated society, we don't end up with those relationships.
Right. And even though we probably know people who are gay, they're either not mm-hmm. showing up or saying they're gay or they leave.
Well, you know, we'd much prefer them all to be in the closet. Is what it comes down to. That's the, you know, if it makes us uncomfortable, we would prefer them just to either go away or not. We've had people tell us they'd prefer us to go away. So, you know, but it's very, very difficult to come to this place when you have no experience in it and no practical experience with it. It's not like it's not something that is easily learned from just someone telling you. You have to experience it. Once you have anyone who's gay in your life, who you love, respect, have gotten to know, then you're going to have the desire to figure it out. Right. And it's very, very difficult. I know a lot of LGBT individuals and allies get very frustrated with people who aren't coming around, but it's like they have to get to know you, and that's really such a huge pivotal catalyst for people to come around on this issue.
You know, and for me, if I'm being 100% honest, I don't think I would be in the place I'm at right now if I didn't have a gay son. There would not have been, even if he came out as an adult, I don't know if I would be where I am now, because there's just such a pressing need when he is this young teenager in my home. He was 13 when he came out. And I was just, the most important thing in my life is being a mother. And I want to know I'm doing a good job, or feel like I'm at least not messing my children up further. And, you know, and I think, okay, well, when I try and be, you know, sympathetic to where family and friends are, and I think of if this was a nephew or a cousin or someone, how would I handle it? And I don't know. But I would like to hope that I would be loving and accepting, but I don't think I would have moved as fast. I mean, literally, it was just a handful of weeks for me to do a complete 180 on most of the things I had thought my entire life. And, you know, but at the same time, there are a lot of gay people out there that are afraid to come out, that are in the closet, that are just petrified. And I just encourage them, if they are able to and feel safe doing it, to come out. Because not only is it healthier for them, but the more gay people that are known and loved and thought of as, hey, this is just a regular person, there's nothing deviant or horrible about him, he's just an absolutely wonderful person. When more people know of these amazing gay people, it really changes hearts and changes stereotypes faster than anything anybody could say or preach from a pulpit. It will be these gay, you know, kids, adults, Mormons, non-Mormons that are coming out that we love and know in our families, in our communities, that will change hearts faster than anything any ally or advocate could do.
Right. So there's a wide spectrum, I think, of people that might listen to this podcast. You know, I think that people who are, you know, active members of the church listen to this, and people who have left the church listen to this, and I even have people who are not even members of the church or never have been, because they find it interesting. So that's great, and I welcome all kinds of listeners, and because I that's one of my main goals, is just to, you know, get accurate information out, and to you know, similar to the affirmation conference that you went to help people feel comfortable in this space, regardless of where they're at, you know, in their own spiritual journeys. Yeah. So with that in mind, what would you want your closing remarks to be about, or what messages do you want to, you know, maybe come through? I mean, I think you've said so much already, but what would you close with?
Well, I'll go first, and then Tom can end. He's the more eloquent of the two of us. But for me, it would have to be that there's three reasons why I have chosen to stay active in the church. And it's interesting, because it feels like this is the hardest road to choose. It would be easier to leave and to just support my son and not navigate the church minefield. But I stay for a few reasons. And one of them is because this is my church. And this is my son's church, if he chooses it to be. I have been a member of this church my entire life, and I'm not going to leave until I'm ready to leave, if ever. And I will not leave because I'm made to feel uncomfortable or pushed out. You know, and I think maybe part of me stays just to make people squirm. but even more important than that, I stay because of the people like my son that are sitting there, that are not out, that are maybe teenagers, maybe adults, and they are in pain and they are alone and just suffering silently. And with us being, you know, advocates and them knowing us and being supportive of our son, they know that they at least have one friend sitting there with them. There was this one time a couple months ago where we were just getting out of sacrament meeting, and this older teenage boy comes up to me and just gives me this really long hug and then turns and walks away. I don't know who he is. I don't know who his family is. I don't know his story. I don't know anything about him. But I just felt like maybe that was one person that I was staying for. And it was just a really touching moment for me, even just not knowing anything about him. And I, you know, and the third reason I stay is, as members of the church, we have kind of this funny stigma of, if somebody goes inactive or becomes less active or is viewed as apostate or on the fringe or rogue or anything, they kind of lose their voice and people stop listening to them because they're not quite righteous enough anymore. And part of me stays so that I don't lose my voice, so that in whatever sphere of influence I might have, I can advocate for gay people from within the church. Because there are many that choose to stay and there are many that choose to leave. And I, whatever their decision, I totally support them and I see the benefits of both. But from where we are, I want to not leave the church because the voice that we have right now, we're getting through to some people. Maybe not a lot, maybe just a few. But if we left the church, we would lose any influence we have with helping with that. You know, and it's just really important to me that things get better in the church so that if my son decides to stay or if he leaves and decides to come back, that there will be a place for him to come with his partner if he chooses, and that he could sit next to me along with the rest of our family in church and feel totally comfortable and welcome there. That is my ultimate goal. And that's why, you know, we do what we do.
Thank you, Wendy. And I think you're just as eloquent as your husband.
Thank you.
Tom?
I think she's pretty passionate and gets her point across pretty dang well. You know, I for me, I have a really deep testimony of the gospel, and I haven't had I haven't felt like I have to give that up. I know that the really pivotal for me actually in this last year was a talk by Elder Holland that he gave, and you know, a lot of people talk about the experience where they hear a prophet or apostle speak and they're like the only person in the room, and they like, that was just for me. But he talked about how Christ came upon a scene and his apostles were arguing with a man, and the man was his son was ill, and Elder Holland talked about how this man was advocating for his son and how he was pleading for help and desperate because they had tried everything and nothing they could do. And the apostles, for whatever reason, couldn't help him. And Christ goes to them basically this is the scene where he says to the man, if you believe, anything is possible. And he's able to heal them where everyone, in every other circumstance, and with even the apostles in the church, weren't able to help him. And he talks in that talk about how you can, how important it is just to believe. And that belief is such a powerful word. And that these things, when we expect perfection out of people who are human, who are running the church at every level, from the top to the bottom, we have these expectations that the top should be doing this, and the bottom should be doing this, and you've got people who are largely volunteers at every level here, and the Lord's trying to work with what he has, and it doesn't threaten my faith that that's the case, because if you read the scriptures, that's always been the case. And So I feel emboldened, really, that there's, whether there's, I see changes coming, not necessarily on a doctrinal level, but certainly on a cultural and family level, that are going to be great improvements. And I don't know necessarily what form those are all going to take, but that I see the Lord really having a hand in all of this, and it's going to end up being what He wants it to be. And that is the one of the real wonders of Mormonism, is that ability to access revelation for newer and better things. So I'm always the optimist, I guess. And I'm hoping my son lives in a time and a period that's a totally different experience than the previous generations of gay people.
Right. Well, I can't thank you enough for the time you've spent with me tonight, and also for sharing your children with me. I know that that's always a little bit vulnerable to share your children with people. So they were a delight, and you must be so proud of them. I know you are. And again, just thank you for everything that you've shared, and I hope that this is useful information for anyone who might be struggling with similar issues. And I will be linking to many of the things that we mentioned, as well as some support groups, so that people can know that they're not alone and don't need to be alone. And whether or not you have supportive family, you can always find resources and people who are willing to step in and help you. And we definitely want to be advocates for all of that. So thank you again. And we'll be talking soon.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Mental Health. To discuss this episode, please check us out at mormonmentalhealth.org. To keep the podcast alive, please consider a donation today, again, at mormonmentalhealth.org. Logo was provided by Daniel Singer. Music was generously donated by Lower Lights. Please check them out at thelowerlights.com. And thanks for listening.
Over life's tempestuous sea, chart and compass came from thee, Jesus saved.